三里之中这一家人来将去而旅人也出去大一军所以别所难与多拉跟着三里这盘手
I go fresh as a telling light to the Buddha's Dharma and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings.
I go fresh as a telling light to the Buddha's Dharma and the assembly of saints.
From the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections,May I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging.
The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water.In the middle is Mount Mirror, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm,
may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands.
Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapparirāya Ratnamanda Pujamega Sambuddha Sapparirāya Okay, welcome to the ninth session of the Parting from the Four Attachments. Last week we finished the second line, and this evening we're going to venture into the third line. It gets really interesting now, even more interesting. And also it's a holy month, so it's auspicious.There is a sutra called The Great Lion's Roar of Maitreya. Sutra being the words of the Buddha, which says, Someone fills with supremely precious gems as many universes as the Ganges sands and offers them with supreme joy.To the victorious ones. And someone else offers a single verse of Dharma to one being. That enormous gift of precious gems cannot compare to the compassionate act of the gift of one verse of Dharma. The gift of Dharma is incalculable.And if that is so, how can one conceive of the value of two or three verses? And we have four verses, so we can't even calculate the merit. That's a fairly famous quotation to put things in perspective about spiritual value versus material value.Today's topic is loving-kindness. Kenpo Kelsang Gyaltsen, who's another commentator who we haven't met yet, he's the Kenpo at the temple in New York State. And he wrote a little booklet in which he said, the sutras state that it's far more meritorious to practice a single moment of loving-kindnesstowards sentient beings than to make daily offerings to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of countless thousands of universes filled with precious jewels. One moment of meditation on loving kindness for all sentient beings generates more merit than even such an enormous offering of precious jewels.This shows the tremendous benefit of meditation on loving kindness. So the third line of the four attachments reads, if you have attachment to your own purpose, you do not have the enlightenment thought. And in Jetson Drapa Gyaltsen's Song of Experience commentary, he sang, liberating myself alone is without benefit, since all sentient beings of the three realms are my parents. To leave my parents in the midst of suffering while desiring my own bliss is pitiful. Let the sufferings of the three realms of existence ripen upon me, and let my merits be taken by sentient beings. And by the blessings of this merit, may all sentient beings gain Buddhahood. And as happened with the other two lines, Sakyapandita weighs in with very concise commentary to elaborate the meaning of what Drapa Gyaltsen sang. And Sakyapandita said, up to this point, meditation upon loving kindness and compassion, which are the cause for the production of the enlightenment thought, has been indirectly indicated, while the exchanging of self and other, the result of the enlightenment thought, has been directly shown. As before, consequently, all the centuries and centuries of commentaries have taken Sakyapandita's indication and elaborated on it. So that's what we're going to start to do tonight. But before we do that, we want to get clear on some of the terminology that we're going to be using so we can all be on the same page about words. So when we talk about the triple gem, which is also referred to as the three jewels, that refers to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly of exalted bodhisattvas. When we hear the term bodhicitta, that's translated usually as enlightenment thought. We're going to be talking about what these mean, but just to get the words first. And when we talk about loving kindness, that refers to wanting all sentient beings to have happiness and the causes of happiness. So as we'll see, the reason for that is if somebody is not creating the causes of happiness, and we give them happiness, then they're just going to continue to not create the causes in the future. So we want to be able to give both. We want to give beings happiness, but we also want to be able to give them or show them how to create happiness or create the causes. Because obviously we're not totally clear on that, or we wouldn't have any suffering. So that's the definition of those terms. His Holiness the 42nd Sakyatrizin said, the word Bodhi is related to Buddha. It is a word for the ultimate result, which is complete Buddhahood. The word citta means mind. Citta here does not mean the mind of a Buddha. It means our ordinary minds. So bodhicitta, or enlightenment mind, means the mind that has the wish to attain Buddhahood. This is the literal meaning of bodhicitta. As well, there's some concepts I'd like to just put out before we start looking at the text. So one of the concepts is that sentient beings are countless or limitless, which means basically, practically speaking, they're infinite. We talked before about the different realms and how there's more beings in the hell realms, lots of beings in the hungry ghost realm, lots of beings in the animal realm, and as you go up there's fewer. And then there's also the Bardo, which has lots of beings in it. And then there's the higher realms, the form and formless realms. And then there's countless universes. And every time they make a new telescope and send it up, we get another picture of how big the universe is, and everybody's minds are blown. It's incredible, really, if you've ever seen any of those recent photos. So it's too big to count. So for practical purposes, sentient beings are infinite. So that's one thing. Another concept is that our lifetimes are beginningless. The Buddha has the ability to see future lives and past lives. And so he was asked the question, if you look back in your past lives, when did it all begin? And what he said was that he looked back and he couldn't see any beginning. And I remember His Holiness Sakyatrichin, the 41st Sakyatrichin, wrote one time, he said, this is one of the great mysteries of existence, is that our minds are beginningless. Our mind streams. We don't have a creator God like some religions do. So if you put together those two concepts, which are sentient beings are infinite in number and lifetimes are beginningless, then you can conclude that all sentient beings have been our mother, not only once, but many times, countless times. There's this interrelationship we have with all sentient beings where they are or have been our mothers. So these are concepts that we're going to be using in the discussion tonight about loving kindness and the explanation of the third line. So His Eminence Chogyi Trichen Rinpoche wrote, all sentient beings within the three realms of existence have at one time been our own kind mother and father. Just as you have direct parents during this lifetime, so all sentient beings have also been our own parents. And we need to understand this well if we are to recognize our deep affinity with all beings. If we have understood this, it ought to be clear by now that it would be a mockery if we were to abandon all of these loved ones to the suffering of existence. If we are unable to have faith in these words of the Buddha, this is a real pity. Just because we are able to look after ourselves, what kind of accomplishment is that? Rather, we should try to find a way to rescue every being from the suffering of conditioned existence. For this, we must learn to regard other beings as more important than ourselves. So that reflects back to what we've said many times before, that self-cherishing is really, it's really the number one problem. It's the cause of our suffering. Self-cherishing is the slumber of ignorance that keeps us suffering in cyclic existence. And His Eminence Chogyi Trichen Rinpoche continues saying, Drapa Gyaltsen questions us, voicing his realization that it would be no good at all for ourselves alone to attain liberation, would it? What would there be to gain from being the first to reach the, quote, finish line, unquote, of enlightenment? If the world is full of suffering, he asks, what is the benefit of myself alone attaining enlightenment? We would be leaving behind all sentient beings in the three realms of existence, who at one time or another have been our own kind mother and father. To simply ignore their plight now would be deplorable. Would it not be a cause for shame for us to reach a state of enlightenment while abandoning all sentient beings who have been our mothers in the dense forest of suffering? Those who seek liberation for themselves alone should indeed be pitied. We must now examine more deeply the motivation with which we have sought liberation, until we come to feel saddened or even ashamed at the thought of exclusively seeking our own liberation. All the unwelcome suffering we must endure originates in self-cherishing, without a doubt. Just look at all the sentient beings who have been single-mindedly chasing after their own welfare, almost without interruption, yet have never derived any lasting happiness. In contrast, a fully enlightened being who has pursued the benefit of others has achieved the bliss of the exalted state of Buddhahood. It is further explained in the teachings that whatever happiness we experience, whether it be short-lived or enduring, has its origin in kind-heartedness and altruism. If we work for our own ends and purposes, we inevitably encounter suffering. If we work for the benefit of others, we meet with happiness. When pursuing our own welfare, without fail, we become completely ensnared in the three defilements of the three mental poisons of ignorance, attachment, and aversion. Do we not? This is why running after our own welfare creates suffering. The teaching on the third line of Manjushri extols the virtues of altruism and demonstrates that we do not ultimately benefit from pursuing personal rewards. Rather, the noble ones teach the necessity of dedicating ourselves to others. We have habitually become so accustomed to thinking of our own benefit, yet we have never truly succeeded in this endeavor. Would it not be better now to consider the matter differently? For this reason, the Bodhisattvas have put forward the idea of radically changing our priorities. Rather than making our own welfare the highest priority, they have put the welfare of other beings above their own, and making this the foremost concern. If all suffering originates from a selfish motivation, and if our selfish motivation has failed to bring us happiness, but instead has led only to suffering, what harm is there in heeding the advice of the Bodhisattvas and trying the opposite? So this line in the last paragraph there about radically changing our priorities. Karen and I did a course several years ago at the International Buddhist Academy called Radical Altruism. And that was life-changing for me. I mean, that was like a 180. This concept of, gee, I've gotten it wrong so far. Maybe I need to do a switcheroo here and go in another direction. This idea of radically changing our point of view and our orientation, it's counterintuitive, actually, at first. But I have to admit, I'm not enlightened from having been self-centered up until now, and maybe it's worth a try, like he says. So as usual, none of this has to be accepted on faith. Try it. That's what the Buddha said. Don't take my word for it. If you think you're honoring me by believing what I say because I said it, you're not honoring me. That's not what I want. I want you to try it on for size and see if it fits for you. T. Tinchuli was where the course was. Is that how you pronounce that, Karen?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Tinchuli, a suburb of Kathmandu. Amazing. His Eminence Chogyal Trichen Rinpoche goes on to say, hence, Drapa Gyaltsen goes on to reveal the importance of cultivating altruism, which is the intention to benefit sentient beings, as a far more elevated reason to practice Dharma than the mere pursuit of our own liberation. In fact, to gain our own liberation alone should be the last of our priorities. Jetson Drapa Gyaltsen is showing us how one is able to benefit others as well as oneself through altruistic intentions by generating the enlightenment thought, the wish to attain enlightenment for the sake of others. This is the most valuable of all endeavors, and we should definitely pursue it from this point onward. Once we have determined to reach the noble state of mind, we must follow a tradition of contemplation and meditation. In the beginning, we need to first arouse the strong wish to bring happiness and the causes of happiness to other beings, and this is known as the practice of loving kindness. To generate the precious enlightenment thought, the intention to attain enlightenment for the sake of others, it's necessary to first cultivate loving kindness towards other living beings. This begins by meditating on our own mother and reflecting on how indebted to her we are. We need to contemplate all the kindness our mother has shown us from the day we were conceived right up to the present. She has consistently devoted the fruits of her labors so that we might be raised and educated. When we follow this line of contemplation, we are able to recover an amazing store of memories recounting our mother's acts of kindness. Our relationship with her will become much healthier and more affectionate, and we will truly wish her to be happy and have all the causes of happiness. Cherishing others defines someone as a holy person, said Geshe Tashi Namgyal. Cherishing others defines someone as a holy person. In a nutshell, that's what he said. The 41st Sakyatrizin said, from beginningless time up until now, we have attachment to self. We are always thinking to do things for the sake of self. We have self-purpose. Self-purpose is the only matter that we have been taking care of, yet all we have achieved is suffering. This time, we are born as a human being, and we have all the facilities to study and practice Dharma, and therefore, we must give up attachment to the entire samsara to at least seek nirvana and liberation. We have to give up samsara, give up nirvana, give up liberation. And then he said, this line also means that this time we must destroy self-purpose and devote our time and energy fully for the sake of other sentient beings. To do that, we need genuine loving kindness and compassion. Without loving kindness and compassion, one could not give rise to bodhicitta, which is the enlightened mind. In other words, this instruction explains bodhicitta directly, but indirectly it also explains the cause of bodhicitta, which is loving kindness and compassion. Now we're going to learn how to grow a Buddha. So I made a chart here, which is hopefully helpful to see the steps. So until now, in the first two lines of the Parting from the Four Attachments, those first two lines are shared between the Foundation Path and the Great Vehicle Mahayana Path. So renouncing this life, renouncing samsara, that's a shared value between the two paths. Starting now in the third line and in the fourth line, it's all going to be Great Vehicle Mahayana. The two paths have two different goals. The Foundation Path has the goal of liberation, which is also called Nirvana. And the Great Vehicle Path has the goal of the Great Perfect Enlightenment, also known as Buddhahood. In order to attain Buddhahood, we have to reverse engineer it, and we have to go backwards in the steps to see how we get here. The way we do that, of course, we start as a sentient being with Buddha nature, which is the potential. It may be actualized or not, but once we have the propensity to actualize the Buddha nature, then we do refuge and renunciation. We've spent a lot of time talking about renunciation. The first two lines of the Parting from the Four Attachments are extensive discussion about renunciation. Realizing that samsara is not worth it. And then once we have refuge and renunciation, then we go through the progressive steps of developing all our altruism. As we heard, that's the ticket. That's the way we get to the goal. What we're going to do is we're going to walk through the steps of loving kindness, compassion, which lead to the enlightenment thought or bodhicitta, and the practices of which lead to Buddhahood or enlightenment. We're going to go through the details of how do you do that. Nicole, I don't know if you remember, but several weeks ago you asked, we mentioned loving-kindness, and you asked about, well, how do you do that meditation? And I said, well, we're going to learn how to do that if you can hold on to that question. So we have arrived to that point. First, we're just going to walk through the steps so you have an overview of what they're like, and then we're going to actually start doing the meditations and practicing them. Okay? We'll leave this up for a few weeks here, probably. We'll start with loving kindness. That's the topic for tonight. And there are some steps in the loving kindness meditation, which we'll articulate now. We start out with the first step is to meditate on loving kindness towards one's mother. And there are some sub-steps to that, which we'll go through. And then we meditate on loving kindness towards our relatives. And then we meditate on loving kindness towards our acquaintances or people that we work with or people that we know or people that we associate with or run into, people that we know, in other words. So there's a step meditating on that group of folks. So all of that is sort of the first step for loving kindness. Then the next step is to meditate on loving kindness towards sentient beings for whom we are indifferent. And that, of course, is a much larger group. I would say probably most sentient beings we are indifferent to. But the reason that we include them is, going back to the previous concepts, in previous lifetimes, those sentient beings have been our mothers. Not once, but many, many times. Mothers, fathers, family. So even though we are indifferent to them now, our obscurations prevent us from seeing them as our mothers, our previous mothers. It's our obscurations that stop that. So we need to remove that, so to speak, by meditating on loving kindness towards the beings we're indifferent to. Then the next step in the loving kindness meditation is to meditate on loving kindness towards our enemies or those who cause obstacles for us. Again, they have been our previous mothers, but we don't see that now. Personally, I like to think I don't have any enemies, but there are certainly some people that create obstacles for me, including my landlady who won't fix the roof that leaks and stuff like that. If you don't want to think about enemies, you can think about obstacles. And certainly, sometimes we run into those, I think. But again, they've been our previous mothers, so we want to generate loving kindness even towards them. And then the last step in the progression of loving kindness meditation is to meditate on loving kindness towards all sentient beings. Why? They've previously been our mothers. So it's a gradual expansion of our point of view from what we normally do, which is to think about, number one, maybe our family, maybe our friends, but rarely about all sentient beings. We're expanding our vision and we're expanding our practice, and as a result, we expand our merit, which, if you remember from past discussions, we need to accumulate merit in order to realize wisdom, which is basically another way of saying enlightenment. This expansion of our vision helps us in that practice. So Kenpo Kelsen Gyaltsen said, the traditional Mahayana great vehicle way is to first meditate on your mother, then your father. But if your thoughts of them are not easy, in some individual cases it is acceptable to use other relatives. According to the traditional teaching, it is the mother first. Some folks either didn't have a mother, or they had a mother that wasn't very nice. And so it's not easy to do the meditation on their mother. My father, for example, had an evil stepmother. That happens. If you're in that situation, what you want to do is think of another person in your life who either played the role, or, you know, raised you, took care of you, or the person who showed you the most kindness in your life. So one of those folks you want to pick out if you don't want to use your mother as your object of meditation. The point is to find somebody who was really kind to you and helped you grow, you know, from birth on up to adulthood. Going back to the steps that we go through, when we start to meditate on the kindness of our mother, the first thing we do is we visualize our mother. We see our mother, we picture her, we remember her. Whether she's alive or not doesn't matter. And we just focus on her. We draw our attention and we remember her. And then once we've done that, the next step is to remember her kindness. Starting from conception, pregnancy, goodness knows there was kindness in that phase. All of the discomforts and things that your mother possibly went through. Maybe she stopped smoking, stopped drinking just for you. Maybe she started paying more attention to her diet just for you. Maybe she took care of her health just for you. Maybe she took care of her sleep hygiene just for you. She was focused on your well-being during that whole period. Some of you women know what I'm talking about, right? And that was something where she put you first. And she did it out of kindness, out of caring for you. It certainly wasn't easy, I'm sure. And then the whole birth process and what that entails. And then once you were born, a little helpless baby who would have died the first day without her care, she cleaned you, she fed you, she dressed you, she hugged you, she kissed you, she worried about you, she listened for your every cry and what it meant, whether you were hungry or whether you were whatever, needed a change or whatever. Her focus was on you. And her kindness was for you. And then all the sacrifices that she made, buying clothes for you, taking care of you, looking after you, worrying about you, being mom's taxi, driving you to soccer practice, taking you to school, doing everything that mothers do for children. Her focus was on you, and she sacrificed for you. And if we think about it, we might recall instances of that that maybe we haven't thought about in a while. I remember in my family, there was lots of kids. I was the youngest. And kids grow up and they grow out of clothes. And even though there were hand-me-downs, there were still lots of winter coats that had to be bought every couple of years. And I remember my mother did not buy any winter coats for herself for 15 years. The kids all had coats. She wore the same coat. That's just one example that I remember. What we want to do is we want to recall the kindness that our mother has shown. And not only that, besides giving you your body, and we spent quite a discussion on precious human rebirth and how precious and rare it is, she gave you your body. Without that, you don't have a precious human rebirth. But not only that, she taught you right and wrong. She taught you how to speak. Children learn how to speak before they learn how to read. You learned how to speak from listening to your mother speak and her teaching you how to speak. She taught you how to be socialized. What's right and what's wrong in public. Don't do that. Our socialization comes from our mother. Our ability to function in society comes from our mother. And she underwent all kinds of hardships doing that, I'm sure. Hauling you out of Walmart while you were screaming. Right? You ever seen that? So we want to remember all these kindnesses that she showed us. Your mother or whoever had that role for you. And then the next step is we want to meditate on loving kindness towards her. So, first of all, we want to generate loving kindness that's linked to the enlightenment mind. So we want to think, in the meditation, we want to think, currently my mother is suffering somewhere in cyclic existence. And I must help my mother, my kind mother, to be happy and to have the causes of future happiness. And then the next step is we want to generate loving kindness that's linked with intention by thinking, I wish my mother could be happy and have the causes of happiness. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't that be wonderful if my mother was not only happy but had the causes for future happiness? And then the next step is to generate loving kindness that's linked with aspiration. We've talked a lot in the past about aspiration. And the way that we do that is to think in the meditation, may my mother be happy and have the causes of happiness. So, in aspiring in this way is called loving kindness associated with aspiration. So there's these subtleties about different kinds of loving kindness and generating loving kindness in these different ways. After we have practiced that towards our mother, we expand that meditation towards our father. Now, whatever role your father had, he had some role in your upbringing, whether he, you know, put food on the table or put shoes on your feet or drove you to school or played softball with you or whatever. Your father or somebody like your father had a role in your development as the person that you are today, as your growth as a human being. So then we repeat the steps that we just went through with our father as the object. So we visualize our father, we think about the kindness and so on, the steps that we just went through. Father becomes the object for those steps, and we develop loving kindness towards our father. When we've done that, we go back and we think about our brothers and sisters, and we go through the steps towards them. Hopefully we had good relationships with them, but even if we didn't, in previous lives they were our mothers. And then we do our aunts and our uncles and our cousins and our relatives, and we go through those steps, same steps towards them, our closest relatives. So the idea is to meditate on whomever most easily gives rise to thoughts of loving appreciation and gratitude in your mind. Because every aspect of yourself is a human being, along with every opportunity you now have or will have, both directly and indirectly, has been given to us by our parents. Your parents have been and are the most important people in your life. And this is the way to meditate, by contemplating their kindness. And according to the Buddhist tradition, your parents have been your parents not only in this lifetime, but in countless previous lifetimes too. And in countless past lives, they have also given up their own chances for happiness and liberation for your benefit. First, we visualize our mother. Then we remember the kindness. And having recognized her kindness, we think, how can I repay that kindness? She showed so much love and benefit for me. And we need to think, what can I do to show love and benefit for her? How can I repay her kindness? Well, what would really help her is if she were happy. And if she were engaged in virtue, that would be the cause of future happiness. And that would bring her more happiness. And then you should think, oh, how happy she would be then. Thinking in this way is called loving kindness associated with an intention or a wish. And then there's loving kindness associated with a commitment or a resolve. So you want to think in your meditation, to the best of my ability, I will work to bring my mother happiness and to help her to engage in the causes of happiness. resolved to do whatever is necessary to help her, however possible. And then there's loving kindness of aspiration. May my mother be happy and have the causes of happiness. And this is the loving kindness associated with aspiration. And then finally, you say to yourself, I do not have the power to make my mother happy now and enable her to have the cause of happiness. Who has that power? Real help comes from the Buddha, Dharma, and the Noble Assembly, who can guide her to happiness. So, I need to take refuge in the Triple Gem and attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. And then you expand the practice to your father, your relatives, your friends, your neighbors, your work colleagues, anybody you have a connection with, and so on. That's all the first step. Then you meditate on the beings that you're indifferent towards. Why? Because even though they're strangers at the moment, they were your mother and father. And also, they're the largest group, so you generate more merit. Then you meditate on your enemies or the folks that create obstacles for you. Because in reality, they were your mother and your father. So they've been kind to you in the past. Now they have obscurations. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making trouble for you. So they're suffering from their own obscurations. And we need to sort of rise above that and generate loving kindness towards them. But there's also another reason, because even though they appear as our enemies or our obstacle makers, by doing that, they reduce our own pride and they give us an opportunity to practice patience. And if you remember going back, patience is one of the six perfections. And you can't practice patience unless you have somebody to be patient about or towards. So even though they're a pain in the neck now, they're actually your teacher and your benefactor by giving you this opportunity to perfect patience. Without the perfection of patience, there's no enlightenment. Geshe Thashi Namgyo used to say that the really advanced practitioners, when they would find somebody who was really, really a pain in the neck and really a hassle, they would give them gifts so they would stay close to them and hassle them all the time. Are we at that point? Should I give a gift to my landlady? Yeah. Please hassle me some more. So this is this 180 radical altruism idea that we talked about in the beginning. Okay. The reason these folks are our enemies and our obstacle makers is because we have harmed them in the past. We created that karma. It's our fault. We did it. That karma is now ripening. They are actually being kind to us because they're giving us a chance to exhaust that karma. Once it's exhausted, it's done. It's over. The debt is paid. So really, it's a kindness. If we don't react negatively, if we don't retaliate, if we don't get angry, if we don't react negatively, the karma ripens, that's the end of it. It's over, folks. It's good news. So that's why we have to develop patience so we don't react when somebody's hassling us or whatever. Okay? Even if you don't have enemies, there's still chances to run into obstacles in practice. And then the final step is to meditate on loving kindness towards all sentient beings without any exceptions or without any discrimination. Okay? That's a pretty big group, all sentient beings. It's infinite, right? So that's a big chunk to take on in one bite. So what we can do is we can break it down into the six realms. Okay, so we've already gone through that, the six realms. And we know that there's lots and lots of suffering, especially in the lower realms, so we can develop loving kindness to first all the hell realm beings who've all been our mothers and are suffering now. Goodness knows. And then the hungry ghosts, develop kindness towards them. They've all been our mothers. They're really suffering. And then towards the animals, towards the humans, demigods and gods. We can work our way through the realms and develop loving kindness towards each of those groups of sentient beings. Form realm, the formless realm. They may not be suffering too much at the moment, but they will for sure. When their karma expires, they're going down. There's nowhere else to go but down. And they will suffer even more than the hell beings. So we can include them too. They've all been our mothers. They've all been kind. And we can now repay that kindness. We have a chance to do something now about that. So we should think that limitless sentient beings who need happiness and the causes of happiness now, but we don't have the power to help them right now. Who possesses that power? Completely enlightened Buddhists do. They teach the Dharma. They show the method for generating loving kindness for sentient beings. The Buddhas have the power by teaching. They can't do it for us. They can't wave a magic wand and say, okay, folks, you're all enlightened. Have a nice day. It doesn't work that way. What do? They teach. They show the way. They show the path. They teach the Dharma. It's up to us to do it. But without the Dharma, we don't have a chance. What we need to do is become enlightened ourselves so we can also do that. We can teach and help sentient beings get out of this mess that we're in. Kempo Kelsang Gyaltso said, when doing this actual meditation, it's important to do it in a broad way toward every sentient being without exception. Bring all sentient beings into your meditation. This is very beneficial because if the object is limitless, then the virtues produced in your mind are also limitless. This is what is known as universal love. In summary, to perform the actual meditation, you start with your mother. Remember her kindness and the wish to repay her kindness. And then the wish that she has happiness and the causes of happiness. And then resolve to provide happiness for her by attaining enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Then you repeat the meditation for your father, then for your relatives, those towards whom you're indifferent, to your enemies and your obstacle makers, and then all sentient beings. So that's the run through of how you do the first of the steps towards enlightenment, which is to develop loving kindness. Any questions about that? Okay, well, we will now start the meditation, to actually do the meditation. So find a posture that you're comfortable with. Hopefully elongating your spine a bit. And just take a moment to transition into a quiet mind. And when you're ready, think about your mother or whoever played that role for you of nurturing, and see if you can actually visualize your mother, recall her, and whether she's living or not, it doesn't matter, but just remember her. And remember all the kindness that she showed you from the moment of conception. She put you first in her lifestyle, in her thoughts. She worried about you. She gave up her sleep for you. She might have even had indigestion for you. For months and months, she carried you, she fed you, nurtured you. You were in her thoughts constantly. And then the moment of your birth came and she gave birth to you. That may not have been easy. She gave you your life, your body, your precious human rebirth. She held you. She fed you. She loved you. She cleaned you, she dressed you, she kissed you, and she thought about you constantly. She worried about you. She educated you, she taught you to speak, she socialized you. Taught you right from wrong, took you to school, created all the opportunities that you now enjoy as an adult. She did that out of kindness. But how is she now? Is she suffering in samsara? Wouldn't it be nice if she were happy and not suffering? Wouldn't it be wonderful if I could help her be happy and have the causes of future happiness? How can I do that? I can't do that now. I don't have the power. I want to do that. How can I do that? Who can do that? Only a Buddha can do that, really. Only a Buddha has the power to lead people out of suffering. So if I want to do that for my mother, I should aspire to attain perfect enlightenment in order to help not only my present life's mother, but all my mothers. So I must develop the enlightenment thought in order to attain enlightenment, in order to repay the loving kindness of my mothers. Okay, so what the masters say is to do very short meditations. We now have the structure for the meditation that you can do for your father, for your family, for your neighbors, and so on. But also, the meditation doesn't end when you get up off of the cushion. This is something we want to integrate into our attitude and our thinking throughout our daily life, so that we don't just see people as strangers that we're indifferent to, or animals as animals, but that we start to think about them as our kind mothers, and we can generate our own loving kindness in that way. So we can do the dedication now. So
by this merit, may all attain omniscience, may it defeat the enemy wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious, may it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues, that I may train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the Supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.